Welcome to the Exec MBA Podcast. I'm Brett Twitty, Director of Admissions for the Executive Formats at the Darden MBA, and you are listening to a new episode. So in today's episode, I'd like to feature a conversation I recently recorded with Ron Wilcox. Ron is Senior Associate Dean here at Darden, overseeing our MBA, Executive MBA, and MSBA, that's our Master's in Business Analytics programs. But prior to his current role, he was actually Associate Dean for our Executive MBA program. So Ron's done a lot here at Darden. He's also a marketing professor, a member of our marketing faculty. And we sat down to talk a little bit more about his path, what led him to Darden, why he's passionate about teaching, how he thinks about writing cases, some of his favorite cases through the years, and what he enjoys about working with executive format students. I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Ron Wilcox. So Ron, you've been at the Darden School for a while now. Tell us a little bit more about your story. What did you do before you got here?
Well, I've been here. I almost choke on saying this, but I've been here almost 20 years now. And I was on the faculty at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. Prior to that, did a stint with the Securities and Exchange Commission as an economist. And before that, I was in graduate school. So that's kind of my path. But I came here 20 years ago, and the school's basically stuck with me because I really like it here. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it. So it's been great.
What led you to Darden?
Reputation in teaching is what it comes mm-hmm. down to. I was a good teacher at Carnegie Mellon, and that's a wonderful institution. I still have a lot of friends back there. But Darden had a reputation for building the world's best programs, and that was really attractive to me. Personally, because I, regardless of whether I was going to be rewarded for it or not, I knew I was going to put a lot of time into designing courses. And here, it's rewarded, and you get to work with your colleagues doing it. So it was a good fit mm-hmm. for who I am and what I want to do. So that's originally why I came.
Mm-hmm. And you've been here now for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And you're a marketing professor.
I am. I'm a marketing professor. I teach the core marketing class. I've taught core marketing in the executive MBA program for years now, which I really enjoy, partly because I feel like I get as much as I give in that mm-hmm. situation because, the students come in, they have some experience, so I always learn through the stories of the students things that I don't or wouldn't have already known. So that's been great. I also teach in the residential program, and I also teach an elective, which I jointly developed with Boston Consulting Group, with consultants from them, in the executive MBA program and the residential program. That's a pricing elective. Mm-hmm. That's been fun.
So you mentioned that you learn as much from the student, and yeah. it's a sort of two-way yeah. flow of information. What else do you enjoy about having that, you teach the full-time students, you teach the yeah. exec students, those classrooms must be similar in some ways and different
yeah.
than others.
Yeah, probably more similar than different. I mean, mm-hmm. I would say 80% similar, 20% different. Mm-hmm. With the executive MBAs, I think it's partly the stories. It's partly, frankly, as I get a little bit older, it's sometimes more fun to teach students that might be a little bit close to where you are in life. Maybe have some of the same experiences mm-hmm. in life leads to a different set of examples sometimes mm-hmm. in class than you can do in the residential program. I've kept up with students, some of the students, particularly through the years from that program. But residential is great too. That they're young, they're mm-hmm. gung ho. They may not have had a real career oriented job. Well, they had good jobs, but they kind of knew going in they might be switching at some point. Where it's more of a mix in the executive mm-hmm. MBA program.
Yeah, so. We do have a lot of people who have a lot of different potential career paths afterwards. So, when you think about executive format students, and obviously coming to Darden, I think about the case method and yeah. what that might mean for someone's professional growth and development,
yeah.
Given their career stage. But for many of our prospective students, you say case method, it's not yeah. really, most people don't know exactly what that is. How would you explain it?
Well, I would say it's learning in a real contextualized situation. So, and there's good, research. I won't sit here on your podcast, Brett, and quote research, but there's good research to support the fact that that's the way adults learn better through what amounts to a case method. In a Darden case method environment, what it means is the case or the class, any individual class, is focused on a real decision facing a business. And the analysis that you do is not just analysis for analysis' sake. It's analysis that you're doing to help maybe a manager or the CEO come to a decision in a particular situation. So it does a couple things. I think it actually teaches the content better, you know, whether it's marketing content or accounting content. But I think, and this probably is particularly valuable for executive MBA students, it develops with students a comfort in expressing their thoughts, having them rebutted by others, and then coming back into the conversation. More what you would see in a real senior management meeting, right? You can really see the students change over the course of the program with that. Some of them come in, they're a little bit tentative about their own ideas. They're a little bit, I'm not sure I want to stick my neck out in a group situation. And you see that comfort develop. It's really, I'd call it executive presence. Mm-hmm. So in a Darden classroom, you're not only learning ethics or accounting or finance, you're also indirectly but very powerfully learning executive presence and how to communicate in a group situation.
And those things have real impact for our students, yeah, particularly given their career stage.
Yeah, I think so.
So you've obviously written cases. You've taught a lot of cases. We've had some students talk about cases that they really found impactful. Like, what do you have any greatest hits or any ones that you really always enjoy teaching?
Well, I have some. You know, I like the cases for different reasons. I mean, I teach a case, which is a very technical case, on the Portland Trailblazers. I do teach that in the executive MBA program. But one of my favorite parts of that case is that I wrote it with one of my students. One of my students left the program, you know, graduated from the program, moved out to Portland, Oregon, and started their own marketing research firm. So they had a real entrepreneurial bend. It's now a nice, large concern. Not super huge, but I mean, it's been a successful marketing research firm. And early on in his career, he got a potential job from the Portland Trailblazers, and I kind of helped him with it. And it was great, you know, working with a former student. My wife and I traveled out there. We got tickets to the Portland Trailblazers basketball game, and we laid out a case, and it's a case that I use a lot. Mm-hmm. Then I've got other cases, like a case on Parsons Brinckerhoff, where I was dealing with the senior management of the company. And what was cool about that case was I had taught them in an executive program, but that's a company that built the New York subway system. So, I mean, doing really cool high-end civil engineering kinds of work. And I was dealing with senior management, and the case evolved out of a real situation they faced, a high-stakes bid that they were involved in to try to build the next subway line, really, in New York City. So, I mean, it's super cool, frankly. Yeah. So I remember these cases for different reasons, but those are two I definitely teach pretty frequently.
Can I ask you what the Portland Trailblazers case was about as a NBA basketball fan?
Yeah, it was about – well, what it was really about is they didn't have enough fans coming to see their games, and they needed to restructure their ticket prices and their ticket packages and their promotions to get more people in the seats at the time. So it's a technical case around a marketing research subject called conjoint analysis. And that's substantively what I'm trying to teach in the case. But of course, it's in a really neat environment. You know, you at the end of the case, you make recommendations to management about season ticket structure, mini game packages, whether they should be given away hot dogs or bobblehead dolls, or whether they should have meet and greets with the, you know, with the players, right? All that kind of stuff that was real practical for them at the time. Mm-hmm. So, that's what that's about.
Any other cases that stand out?
I did a case with Heinz ketchup that I used a lot, kind of an iconic product.
Yeah.
And I used that for looking at differences in retail at a sort of a traditional brick and mortar, but also bringing in ideas from direct marketing, which is, you know, web-based marketing, to kind of contrast the two to see what, you know, what's important in sort of the old school brick and mortars world versus what tends to be, you know, important in web-based marketing. So we do that, and that's kind of a workhorse. And I worked with when I wrote that case, I was working with the brand manager for Heinz ketchup worldwide. So that's actually a really big job, if you think of how big of a product that is. So it was neat.
Wow. Shades of Mad Men. I don't know if you saw that. Last few seasons of Mad Men, but Heinz figured prominently.
Yeah, there's some good YouTube videos on sort of ketchup jokes and little packet ketchup jokes. You know, yeah, you can, after you listen to the podcast, you can go out and find those in your free time.
So how did, I mean, this is a question that's probably on our students' mind and thinking a little bit about your writing these cases. Yeah. Like, how do you get linked up with these people? Exec Ed is, I mean, you had a class, you had a student in a class.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you find the cases that you want to work on?
Yeah, it's a combination of things, but a lot of them do arise through student relationships where a student would be working at a company. And companies have a variety of reasons why they might want to have a case about their company in the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And if you can find a situation where a company would like that, you can and you have a good working relationship with a student, which, you know, is often the case, then you can get good cases that way. And some of my, you know, I'm not going to go on and on about each one of them, but a lot of the ones that get used a lot come from those kind of student mm-hmm. relationships. And then you obviously get inside information of the company. And sometimes I'll call somebody, but it. You know, where I know we have an alum somewhere. I may mm-hmm. not have taught the alum, mm-hmm. But I'll call them because I know they happen to be in a really interesting industry and it's a topic that I want to write a case about. But frankly, it's almost all former student, former person that you taught in executive education, an alum, right, or a recruiter that's coming here. That often the recruiters also have alums along with them, but you might be working with someone that's not an alum because they're the head recruiter. Mm. But it's basically the relationships you develop in the program is what generates that.
So you might see a story in the Journal or New York Times yeah. post, something like that, and say, gosh, that seems interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got one right now. I don't have a legal release on it, Brett.
No, it's all right.
Well, let's just say they make a really high-end cooler products.
Okay, yeah.
And
I think I might know who you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, and our we have an alum who's the CEO. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to get that one done.
Yeah.
You know.
How long does it take to write a case from zero to finish?
Oh, boy. I have written them in as little as 2 weeks, working hard, but normally it's months. Because there's back and forth with the company in terms of getting data. And then at the end, you usually have, you know, you get the lawyers involved. You got to get legal sign off on that. By the way, Brett's a trained attorney. If you ever all out there don't know
that. About that briefly during episode 50.
Yeah, right. So. If you didn't know that. So, but it depends on how many people need to be involved. Mm-hmm. But the writing of it, you know, depends on how long. But, you know, probably a couple weeks worth of writing and mm-hmm. messing around with figures and things.
I always enjoy the story dimensions of it, right?
Yeah.
So the introductory paragraphs or so read
yeah.
more narratively than it's not dry, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Ron was sitting at his desk when he had a thought. You know, I enjoy that.
Yeah, I get in trouble from Darden Business Publishing sometimes because I'm a little too verbose on the front end with the history of the industry or the company.
Sure.
Because I like that.
Yeah.
I think to a certain extent most students do too, but, mm-hmm. you know, you can also – go on and on a little too long, maybe sometimes.
So, and you get to interview people? Do you go and sit down?
Yeah. Not always, but sometimes. Like the Heinz case, I did an interview with the Heinz case. Parsons Brinkerhoff, I flew to New York and interviewed their senior management team. The Heinz case actually involved an interview on video, so we actually captured that so I can show it in class. Mm. So that's great when you can do that.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, yeah, there are interviews.
So you're obviously someone who has a lot of passion for teaching.
Yeah.
Is that something you have, you know, come to over the course of your career? Or did you know, you know, when you got started down this path that you really valued being in the classroom with students?
You know, honestly, pretty early on. Mm-hmm. I come from my mom was a high school teacher. My dad was a high school teacher. And when I went to college, I thought I'd go back and be a high school teacher and coach baseball. That was kind of the my goal. And then I went to college and I found these guys called professors. And I ended up having a job working in the business school, even though I wasn't a business major. I was working in the business school just to make money mm-hmm. and got to know the faculty in the business school really well. And that's really how I mm-hmm. came to it. I said, well, this I really like this.
Yeah.
So I kind of was heading down that path even earlier in life. Mm-hmm. But it's something you get – you understand it better over the years, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't really – at that point, I really wouldn't have understood what it all involved. And I would not have understood, for example, that to be a good – professor, you also have to conduct research in your own area so that you can stay fresh and mm-hmm. stay on top of the latest developments. That's something that came later,
mm-hmm.
but it's something I still enjoy.
So it gets to the craft of teaching,
yeah.
Which is something that gets talked about quite a bit here at Darden.
Yeah.
just how that is such a focus.
Yeah.
You feel like you've gotten much better over the course of your career?
Yeah, I hope that's not a false thought, right? Mm-hmm. But yes. Mm-hmm. What happens is partly you understand yourself and what you can do and what you can't do better as you just do it more. The second thing is you're here, and there's a lot of good teachers here. So you end up picking up things from other faculty. So I came in, and then I learned a lot from, you know, Paul Ferris, who's now retiring, but on the marketing faculty. I learned a whole lot from him. I would say after I was here, we hired Tom Steinberg from Harvard, and he came in, and he had some ideas I hadn't seen before, and I learned from him. But I would say those two, but a lot of other people where you just, you know, you pick things up along the way. I think it's like any other profession in that dimension. Mm-hmm. So,
what is it about marketing in particular that's stimulating to you?
Well, I always liked economics. And the way marketing is taught in a graduate business program, it's sort of like economics meets the real world. I'm not dissing on economists. I was an economist at the SEC for a while. But it's about real product markets, mm-hmm. and how people make decisions in those real product markets, which is the basis of economics. But it's also true that in sort of the modern world, the people that study that the most in the most detail are marketing professionals. So that's what really attracted. So it's part economics and it's part psychology. You kind of have to know human behavior and what makes people buy that sweater you're wearing, for mm-hmm. example. Brett's got a very nice sweater on. I don't know where he purchased it, but it's somewhere along the way he decided he was going to go in and buy it. And you know what was going through his mind and why that one and not another one? It's sort of a kind of a petri dish of human behavior that not only is relevant for what people buy, but is also very interesting in just how they think about life in general a lot of times. So I've found it a fascinating area.
So you have a really unique vantage point here at Darden, right? So you have been a longtime faculty member. You've had a leadership position with the executive MBA program, and now you oversee degree programs, which is, yeah. You know, you see full-time MBA, exec, and MSBA. Obviously a job with a lot of scope. You know, for our prospective students listening to this podcast, you know, what's the value proposition for Darden, sort of the why Darden question that we ask so many people?
Oh, well, I think the value proposition for Darden is clear. It's sort of not muddled. We are a school that differentiates ourselves, and we differentiate ourselves on the student experience, Brad. I mean, we have meetings where all we discuss is how to make a particular quarter better, right, or a particular module of material better, and you've got multiple faculty members sitting in a room trying to figure that out. That just, you can sort of take my word for it, hopefully you will, that doesn't happen very many places at all where faculty spend that much time thinking about the program. It's also true, it's kind of a self-reinforcing cultural thing. So everybody knows that Darden focuses on the student experience, and, you know, I'm not going to quote rankings because I'm not even sure that I know all the rankings, but a lot of those publications were, I think Economist is one of them, where we're ranked for years in a row as the best student experience, basically best teaching faculty in an MBA program. Because people know that, faculty are attracted to Darden because they like doing that. And faculty who are not attracted to doing that don't come, or they may leave, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's the culture. Mm-hmm. So it's a self-reinforcing culture. And I think, you know, that's one dimension of it. Another place that shows up, though, is because of that student experience, we have rabidly loyal alums. Rabidly loyal alums. We're right at the top on that dimension. So I think the community, in any school, you have a community, right? You got an alumni community when you go out. But I think ours we can just look at statistics around engagement, giving, all kinds of other numbers that are sort of indicative of that, how alums help with job placements for our incoming students. We're really good about that. I think that is a very tangible part of the value proposition to the students. But I think that the primitive of that flows from the positive student experience I think they have when they're here. Mm-hmm.
So we talked a little bit about executive presence and communication, yeah. And in addition to the technical learning that goes on in an executive MBA classroom. When you think about sort of the executive student, you know, they range from 5 years to 25, 30 mm-hmm. plus years, mm-hmm. average students 11 years into his or her career. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about the value of the experience for that student, does it change at all, or are there things that are added on? You know, other sort of takeaways that you would want to highlight?
Well, I do think that, you know, what you take from the program probably varies depending on your level of seniority. This is a more senior program than our residential program. You know, sometimes students on the younger side in the program, they're admitted to the program. They could have a very interesting background. You know, we're looking for that. And that will contribute overall to the cohort. I think, you know, it's hard to know what every single person takes away from the program, but I do think that probably the older you are, the more areas like strategy and organizational behavior are very present. If you've managed a lot of people, you're going to recognize that organizational behavior is really important because you hire for skills, but then the real human being shows up and you're dealing with them, right? Sometimes I have noticed that, you know, younger students are going to take more of the technical material away. They really value that. But the older students are going to take more of the human side material away. We've seen that. But I think it's kind of all over the board, very idiosyncratic.
Yeah, it's been interesting having these conversations with students and alumni because invariably, you know, they will talk about the sort of softer end of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think part of that is a reflection of their day-to-day responsibilities. Many of our students are, you know, if they weren't managing when they started the program, they're now starting to manage. If they were managing when they started the program, they're now managing more people. Their jobs and lives have become more complex.
Yeah.
And
that's a hard jump.
Yeah.
Take it from me. Take from, you know, it's hard. That step between technical mastery and being really good at your job and then managing people, particularly if it's a large number of people, it is a huge jump and a big challenge for most people to do that because most people get to that point in their career where people say, well, we want Brett to manage somebody because they've been good at their job, right? But this is going to be a whole different animal.
Completely different.
And I think that's probably where the executive MBA has the biggest impact, I would say, overall, is in people making that kind of really big transition.
Yeah, because you have space, right? You have time in the program to sort of reflect on these things, learn best practices, hear other people's stories.
Yeah.
Right? So it's in addition to the incredible faculty, you have classmates who have been through some of these things. They've had similar challenges. You might say, hey, we've got this thing at work, and you got 6, 12, 15 other people who are like, yeah, that thing? Yeah, we had that thing. Yeah.
Occasionally it's humbling because you'll get somebody in class, you know, that manages a whole lot of people. And, you know, I feel like sitting back on the desk and say, well, yeah, you tell me how it's done because, you know, you just have people to know a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and then in the moment they become the teachers, right, for sure.
So I'm always impressed by, you know, when people talk about why they are interested in the case method from the student standpoint. I mean, I think we can acknowledge there are probably easier paths than Darden for executive format students. Mm-hmm. But the students will say, the reason why I chose to come here, it's a mix of reasons, but one of the things is I knew that would bring more accountability on a weekend residency, for a class. Mm-hmm. How do you think about that from a faculty standpoint? You obviously have to be ready in a different kind of way, too, if you're going to lead a case discussion or a discussion of a particular topic.
Right. Well, I definitely think what you just said is right. They're easier paths, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, part of the reason that Darden tends to have a little bit of a reputation of being hard is because we care a lot, right? It's just an outgrowth of that. Now, I'll quickly mention we have great success in getting people through the program, even people that lead tremendously different lives. So there's a lot of support for getting you through the program. Yeah, you're right, though. As a faculty member, you have to approach it a little bit differently. And one of the main ways that you have to approach it differently, sometimes it's case selection, exactly what you're going to teach. But one thing that maybe some faculty are not necessarily always intrinsically the strongest at is you have to be highly organized. Mm-hmm. Because when you're teaching an executive MBA program, if you're a student in that program, you are planning your life out. All right? And you know, time pressures are very real. Well, as a faculty member, if I'm teaching a residential program and I change an assignment the week before the assignment is due, I've got a pretty good idea that nobody in the class has actually done the assignment at the time that I make the change. That is not true in the executive MBA because people are planning out. So you have to be very intentional and thoughtful about the way you lay things out up front. And frankly, you just got to be organized because the students themselves are organized. Mm-hmm. So
any sort of last thoughts you would want to share with prospective students as to, okay, listening to this podcast, I'm wondering, should I do this? Or yeah. I'm thinking about Darden. Does that make sense for me?
Well, here's what I would say. I would say I wouldn't make a decision on an executive MBA program from a podcast as good as you and I are, Brett. I wouldn't do it. But, you know, if you're thinking about it, nothing is going to help you like attending a class. Yeah. It's showing up and seeing it. And I think when you see it, you'll have a gut reaction, you know, one way or the other, whether it's right for you or not. And so that's what I would do. If you're really thinking about it, go visit a class at Darden. Go visit a class somewhere else if you want to. You know, compare the two. I think it's a big decision. You should shop it. You know, I'm a marketing guy. You should shop it. You should go look at what's happening in the classroom and decide, all right, is that the thing I want? So that's what I would tell people to do. And I think then the decision becomes clear.
Yeah, I think to your earlier point about sort of culture and what community looks like, I think for Darden, I think we have a unique story around that because it's such an interactive learning experience, right? So your classmates are not abstractions or people that you just have lunch with, you know, and then sit through lectures with. They're people that you've gotten to know through class.
Right.
Robert Caraway, long time.
Sure.
So I was in Baltimore with him for a recruiting event. And he turned the whole thing into a case discussion about why you might – what you might consider when choosing an MBA or looking at a business school. And so he made this really powerful point about how the root of the community at Darden is the classroom, right? It all springs from there because of the social learning environment. And I think people hear that word social and like, oh, man, but I'm an introvert. But everybody brings something to the classroom. Yeah. You know, so how while you're here, I might ask you one more question.
Sure.
So sometimes students are intimidated by the participation dimension. Yeah. You know, you could be cold called. You're going to be asked to, you know, raise your hand or contribute or have a perspective. How do you help students think about that or negotiate that?
Well, first of all, let me self-identify. I'm an introvert, right? You that doesn't mean you can't learn to make your voice heard and your ideas heard. And in fact, introverts can have some of the most well thought through ideas because they think about them for a while, right? Maybe in the quietude of their own mind. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen at Darden is there is a group of people that walk in on day one and are a little more hesitant. It's amazing what happens over the course of 2 years. And partly because they just get more comfortable in the environment. It becomes like a work environment for them where they've got a bunch of friends around them, friends and colleagues around them. And once they get comfortable with the people, then you know, either you're an introvert or you know introverts in your life. An introvert doesn't mean they can't speak. They just need to sort of get comfortable, a little more comfortable in the situation, and that happens. Mm-hmm. The cold calls are probably a little bit overdone, Brett. I mean, no faculty member does some – you know, it's pretty rare to do some kind of cruel cold call. You're really trying to put somebody right on the spot. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't happen once in a while, but it's not – it's not the mainstay of what's going on in the actual classroom. You have a lot of discretion on when you want to get in the conversation and when you'd rather have somebody else talk about it.
Yeah, we save the cold calls for law school.
Yeah, sorry. No, we knew a little bit, but you probably had more in law school.
Yeah, I don't remember those very fondly, personally. So so you mentioned that you're working on a case.
Yeah.
What else is next for you? I mean, obviously, your current station keeps you pretty busy.
Oh, my goodness. You don't want to know what's next for me. Next for me is the budget cycle.
Oh, wow. All right.
So, right. And, I'm actually having to manage now. I've taught this for this. I'm actually having to do it. So a lot of it is helping with, admissions, helping with our career center, just trying to be supportive, going through the budget cycle. We're doing some, doing some curriculum innovation things that I'm involved with right now, both in the executive format and in the residential side. That's fun. Mm-hmm. That's a fun part of the work. I would say the budget cycle, frankly, is maybe not part of the work, but that's really, I'm hoping to wrap it up in the next couple of days, take a few days off for Christmas. That's what I'm hoping. So,
well, Ron, thank you so much for taking the time.
I know your
schedule is very full, so it's been a pleasure having you here on the podcast.
Well, thanks, Brett. Much appreciated.
And that was my conversation with Ron Wilcox, Senior Associate Dean for Degree Programs here at the Darden School of Business. Of course, as always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the Exec MBA podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's E-X-E-C, MBA at darden.virginia.edu. And until next time, thanks for listening.